this time.
Well, under Medicaid. They can't get into the exchange, get into the health plan, because they would qualify for Medicaid for the Oregon health plan. I mean, so this leaves this population in that catch-22. They have under 138% of the poverty line, but they're not eligible for the Oregon health plan because of their immigration status.
Some years ago, I immigrated to Canada. I qualified for the Canadian health plan. I think it was 6 months residence, and my employer paid for the coverage up to that point.
I was in England 3 months on a sabbatical many years ago in the 70s, and we qualified for the National Health Service as soon as we showed up.
So every country does it differently.
Mm-hmm. Certainly do.
This happens to be what's in the ACA, and so the basic health plan concept was to work around some of these deficiencies. What other health bills are of particular interest to you in this short session?
I have a bill that will bring Oregon's statutes in line with federal law on electronic prescribing of prescriptions, particularly Schedule II substances. When we first passed the Oregon statutes on electronic prescribing, we left out one category, and that bill would put that category back. I also have a bill that would put quality control processes into any large IT contracts that the state lets. We learned from Cover Oregon that we needed more safeguards in these large IT projects, which frequently fall behind schedule or screw up entirely, and I think that's an important piece.
So that is general, and it wouldn't just be Cover Oregon.
No.
Probably are many others that have had problems in the recent past.
Oh, they sure have been.
And IT is a very difficult field. So those two...
Those are the two bills I have in this session.
And they are ones that originate in the Healthcare Committee?
They both originate in the Healthcare Committee. One is now in the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Health Policy, and one is in the Rules Committee. The one on basic health is in Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. That was a committee bill rather than a personal bill.
Thank you. I'm talking now to Jim Thompson. He's a representative. He lives in Dallas and represents a district that goes north and south of Dallas.
Minnville city limits down to the Lane County line, not including Corvallis.
One of the most slender districts, I think, and that's spread right out one. He's been here at the state capitol for some years, and he's vice chair of the healthcare committee, and that's why we're talking today. So I'm very glad you can meet with me.
Glad to be here.
The main thing I wanted to ask you about was the basic health provision or bill. I think it's HB 4109. It was put into a hearing very early in this session, wasn't it?
Yes.
And tell us what basic health is. I think people are not as familiar with that.
Well, the devil's always in the details on all this stuff. But with all of the things that we try to do in reforming health care, and that includes the Affordable Care Act, you end up with a group of people who still aren't covered. And the concept of basic health is to find an avenue to pick up these people that are left out and get them into some modicum of reasonable health care. And probably we would need to do that even if we said, okay, we're going to cover everybody for health care everywhere. There would still be people that are going to be left out because of circumstances. So this focuses a laser precision on people who would be left out and creates programs to tuck them in. Now, what does it cost? We don't know. Who exactly would it include? We don't know. But we'd have some idea. But, I mean, we don't have parameters on this stuff until we finish the study and decide what the next step is. But it is an adjunct to whatever else we're talking about in healthcare reform to pick up another group of people that are left out. And it seems like every time we do something, we leave somebody out. and no difference here.
Good point. And it said that it particularly addresses the people who are low income, but not below 138% of the poverty level, but they're still low income, up to 200%. Actually, buying health insurance is pretty difficult for them. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And again, it's in the way in which we legislatively, precisely define things. If you are 139% of the federal poverty level, you are still very poor, but you're not included because the formula didn't include you. How do you find a way to deal with people who just barely miss the point, but they're still in dire straits? And that's the problem with government programs trying to define things, because it doesn't take into account individual circumstances that go with those numbers. And I think we're finding that throughout the Affordable Care Act, that we've set limits because we have to. And then we look at those limits and go, oh boy, that wasn't quite right for this person. Well, okay, how do we deal with that person then? Well, we have to have something else that allows another door to be open if we go this route. I don't know whether we can afford to go this route because we haven't seen the numbers. But we certainly can't talk about health care for everybody unless we can produce health care for everybody. And the national numbers that are coming out now from the GAO are indicating with the Affordable Care Act, we're going to end up with 30 million people without health insurance. Well, that's pretty close to what we started off with when we set this up. So even if the number is only 10 million, it's still, what do you do? How do we deal with people that are left out of government equations? And that's what the basic health plan kind of addresses.
And it's another one of these that is optional for states. Is that right?
Yes. It'd be something we would adopt here in Oregon. Other states are doing other things. The basic health is a variety of different approaches. I don't believe there is a single approach. And that's the reason we're approaching it cautiously here, because we don't have, if we do this, then everything is solved. We have to figure out what it is we need to do, how it would be implemented, and what it's going to cost at a time that we're up to our ears in the Affordable Care Act. And that has been a rocky road. You know, we don't need any more rocky roads right now, but we have to address this problem as we move forward, or we're not going to get where the goal was.
And HB 4109 is to study it, as I understand.
Right.
Who's going to do the study? Will it be the Oregon Health Authority?
All the proponents of universal health care will be involved in this study. It's designed to be an open study of the best minds to figure out how to solve the problem and what it's going to cost. Out of it, we hopefully will get some legislation down the road that we'll talk about. And I can't go away from the fact that cost has a lot to do with it, because we are a limited budget state. And if we come in with, you know, this is a great idea, but it's going to cost billions, then we have to find billions. All these things are on the table yet. But at least we're having the conversation. Initially, with the Affordable Care Act, we were talking about this covers everybody, end of story, isn't everything wonderful? Well, as we move into it, no, not quite, for just reasons you cited. People fall off the edges because they don't hit a certain number. And this will be adjunct to that. So I don't know what's going to happen. We've got some very, very good people involved in it, very sincere people, and people with good backgrounds in national, international health policy. So I'm counting on them to come up with something that makes sense. Very often you're going to find in legislation on things that are traumatic, the legislature will opt to do a study or appoint a study group, because the last thing you want here, especially in the relatively short sessions we have, you know, 1 month or 6 months, is to do something that changes the world and shove it out the other end to see what happens. We do that, and generally what happens isn't what we anticipated. So by doing these study bills, it brings in a wider array of people who really know what they're talking about. Legislators don't always know that, and it gives us good advice, good information on which then to base a policy decision in another session. So
if this study is done, then I assume they would report back to the legislature.
Yes.
And maybe would the legislature then have to bring that up, whatever it is, for a vote or for consideration?
I would anticipate what would happen is they will come to the House Health Committee with update reports as the study group progresses. We'll have discussions. We may be able to adjust direction a little bit. We'll be asking questions, and they'll be asking questions too. And out of that, we'll mold this thing over a period of time. We'll eventually come up with a final report that probably will have recommendations in it. Then the question is, how do we put those recommendations in, and which ones of them will go into a bill that will be considered for legislation? Now, I can tell you right now, if the recommendation comes back that, you know, we're going to have all the bells and whistles and only cost $20 billion, you know, end of story, because we just can't do it. But if it comes back something reasonable, there's a way to do this, there's a way to finance it, and it's a reasonable amount of money without closing the public schools, then we probably would look very honestly at it as a realistic proposal. But I don't have any of those numbers yet.
Well, it's interesting because it sounds like it would be kind of interactive. In other words, the study group would be studying it and then talking to you, and the legislators, the committee members anyway, would have some input along the way.
That's how these study groups work in all the cases I know of, is it's an addition to the House or Senate committee that asked for the study group to go out and work on this with the best minds they can find and then report back at regular intervals. We have committee days every quarter in the legislature, and all of the House and Senate committees meet during committee days, and largely that is to take up progress reports from things that are going on out there, you know, and have further discussions between legislators and the people doing the policy design work. And I anticipate that's what we would do in this case.
Yeah. So this would be going on during the period that the legislature is not meeting?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this may take 2 years. This isn't something I expect we're going to turn a study committee loose and in 3 weeks they're going to come back with this wonderful report that solves the problem. This will be an ongoing sort of thing. When we get recommendations, we're going to have to look at them in terms of public policy. Is this a reasonable thing to do in the public arena? Can we afford to do it? The ongoing discussion will also be, after we go down this road, who else is left out? You know, what's the population that we're dealing with that wouldn't be given health services otherwise?
And it has almost unanimous support in your committee, as I understand.
Well, I believe so, because I think the thing that we're going through here in Oregon, and with the Affordable Care Act, it's been unfortunate. The rollout has not gone well, and there's lots of debate over whether or not the direction is even right. But we are where we are, and we're going to have to move forward with some kind of reform, because what we were doing wasn't working for a tremendous number of Oregonians. This is part of a longer process of trying to figure out a better way to do it. And when we do these study committees, that's the point, is trying to put some intellect into the problems that we're facing. And how do we solve the problem better than what we're doing now? Ultimately, it will come down to some decisions being made toward the end. Everything is an ongoing process for incremental improvement. I wish we had a magic wand that we just wave the wand and do it right the first time. Unfortunately, in government, that just doesn't happen. It's a long incremental process to get from where we are now to where we want to be, because you actually have to dismantle a lot of stuff to get something new to work. That's problematic, as you're seeing with the Affordable Care Act and the Oregon Insurance Exchange and all that kind of stuff. You know, we have had our problems if you read the newspaper, you know. Frankly, I think the problems are not yet well defined. We might be advised not to point too many fingers until we can figure out what the problem is, what happened, and how to fix it. Government, the first thing you always want to do is establish blame, because that takes that off of your table and puts it on somebody else's. But this healthcare fiasco, and I don't think that's being too negative to say it, has got plenty of blame from the governor's office to the legislature to the people who instituted it. It didn't roll out well. Now, hindsight's always 20/20. We have a long list of reasons why things didn't go as well as they should have, but they didn't. And it doesn't take much of a rocket scientist to be able to read the newspapers and figure that one out. So now what do we do? And some of these bills are aimed at trying to put some quick fixes in where maybe we should put a little bit more depth. I don't know where we're going to go ultimately with that whole process. It has become political, and the last thing we want to do is further politicize healthcare, become partisan, and that's not necessarily a good route. But, you know, we're going to work our way out of this eventually.
Well, I really like the way you're addressing that in terms of trying to remove the partisan aspects. And on the radio coming here today, I heard that the Cover Oregon website is now going to be used by agents.
I was told this morning by Cover Oregon management that the agents portal is now fully operational, which was not last week. And the part of the problem we've had is that we allowed, one of the good things that I argued for was to allow people to go to their insurance agents and sign up for Cover Oregon through that route, because that's what they're used to doing. What happened was they went to their agents. The agents had no portal that was working, so they ended up, long story short, having to sit down and fill out the applications on paper and submit them on paper into a dark cavern somewhere, and we had lots of problems from then on. Those are being ironed out. I think this is going to smooth out a lot when the agents can submit their applications directly. I have not talked to an agent yet who has successfully done that. I trust what I'm being told is accurate, but bear in mind, sometimes when we launch a new improved website, it takes the first 25 people to use it and then find out it wasn't quite ready. So I'm just holding my fire on the congratulations on that until I hear how it's actually working. Because more than once we've launched a website that was just perfect until it hit the street, and then it wasn't quite so perfect. And I'm hoping we're not doing that, but that's always a possibility, so I will reserve judgment.
Good point.
Now we go into a long period of what happened and how do we fix it, you know, and generally that involves up front, who are we going to blame, you know, because nobody at the top wants to take the blame for it. So it's just a natural human sort of thing. That's how we deal with problems. We will solve these problems. There are people out there who are bright IT people who can get this done. Right now, it's a matter of let's bring the rhetoric down a little bit and get to the solutions part. We'll make it.
Here, here. Just one other bill I wanted to ask you about. Now, this is a Senate bill, so I don't know whether
you may have to explain it to me because I don't have the Senate bills yet. So
okay, but I'll just mention it and just to get it on the record. It's SB 1548, and it simply expands the term providers. That's in a lot of our medical legislation, I
suppose. Is that the bill that deals with nurse practitioners? And
yes.
Okay. Yeah. I do know about that bill. The concept in that bill is that we know we're short of doctors to deliver health care to the expanding population that we have in the particularly in Medicaid and under the Affordable Care Act also. So we're trying to figure out ways to utilize people differently and better to get the job done. The PAs and nurse practitioners came together and said, let's pull every reference out of Oregon laws, and that was actually done, that mentions a physician. Then we'll look at each one of those and ask the question, wherever it says a physician can do something, can a nurse practitioner or physician's assistant do this logically, safely, without endangering patients, so we can expand the workforce? People, they're already there. They're to be able to do more. We move them up a notch, get them working at the top of their license. And that's what's going on there. How can we best utilize the people we already have, knowing that we're going to need a lot of personnel with a lot of experience, and we can't train them fast enough? So we have to kind of reshuffle the deck chairs a little and see if we can buy some more expertise. And so far, the concept being widely embraced. It's always difficult, though, when you start saying that you're going to expand scope of practice or change scope of practice, because everybody first starts looking at who's going to lose something. Maybe nobody will lose something. Maybe everybody will gain something. Just a process again.
But, it looked like a positive thing.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Thompson.
You're quite welcome.
Really happy to visit with you today.
Enjoyed it very much.
Representatives Greenlick and Thompson are members of different political parties, but both spoke very warmly about the relationships with each other, and both seem very favorable toward extending medical coverage to more and more Oregonians. They both stressed their view that Oregon tends to do health reform incrementally, step by step. So I asked Representative Greenlick his views on efforts by the group Healthcare for All Oregon to legislate publicly funded universal medical care in a single bill. And we went on to talk about the accomplishments of Cover Oregon.
Well, I had been working with Healthcare for All Oregonians, and what I had hoped they were going to submit was a constitutional referral that I've been trying to get referred to the voters for about a decade now, which would declare healthcare as a right of all Oregonians and put that into the Oregon Constitution. My wife and I tried it, I think, in 2005 as an initiative, and we fell short of getting the 250,000 signatures we needed. We got about 225,000.
Close.
And then I tried in two sessions to get it referred, and it got thwarted. It got out of the House in both sessions, but got stopped cold in the Senate. So I had hoped that Health Care for All Oregonians would pick that up, and instead they decided to put in the single payer bill, which I knew didn't have a chance to go anywhere.
A constitutional amendment like that, what would be the implication, do you think?
Well, the implications, it would simply put as a matter of constitutional requirement that every Oregonian had access to affordable and effective health care as a right, and would have required the legislature to begin to implement that right. That seems to me the underlying conceptual basis for pushing some of these bills that on their own don't have any specific compulsion behind it.
Vermont has dabbled in something similar to that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have a constitutional amendment, though. Am I right in that?
No, I think they just did it by statute.
By statute.
And I understand that San Francisco may have done it as well.
That would be interesting.
It would be.
A large city, a large important city like San Francisco, and how they handled it from then on. We're kind of keeping our eyes on all 50 states, and it's interesting that only, I think, 14 are doing an exchange on their own, and Oregon is one of them.
And we're sort of right in the middle. We're 7th out of 14 in the numbers we've enrolled in. Yeah, I think it's important to see how both the Medicaid expansion and the exchange works out. And we've now added more than 200,000 people to health insurance between the exchange and the Medicaid expansion. In fact, we've enrolled 110,000 through the exchange portal, 35,000 of those in private health insurance and 65,000 to the Oregon Health Plan. We put those 220,000 people or so, and we've reduced the uninsured rate in Oregon by about 25% to 30%. I mean, we do things sort of incrementally in this state, but that's a good start. And I hope we'll get to 500,000 in that before we're done.
We may very well. I mean, things are going better with the exchange. I heard on the radio coming here today that now agents have a portal open for them.
You heard on the radio that's actually working. That's good to hear. It was supposed to open today, but who knows? we've been disappointed before.
We have been.
That'd be great if that works.
And community partners as well. So that's a good start, and it should make people who are having trouble get an agent.
Well, I think they should check into the exchange. I mean, if they just go to the website, they'll find information on how to get to an agent or a community partner.
Right.
I think there's some wonderful health insurance options for people, and they should get in and see what's going on.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting how things work with the so-called co-ops. I know they're not exactly co-ops.
It is. Of course, we have one of the major co-ops in the country in the Northwest, the co-op in Seattle, the cooperative program in Seattle, which has 500,000 people in it.
Really?
Well, it's a consumer co-op.
And it provides health insurance?
Yes, it provides health. It's been there since the early 50s. It's the Group Health Cooperative of Puget Sound, and it's an extraordinary program. In its original many years, you had to pay $200 to buy a membership in the co-op to get health insurance. More recently, you can get it either by being a co-op member or by being in a group, but it's an extraordinary cooperative. They do a great job.
That's very good to hear. Well, thank you very much for talking to KBOO this morning.
I was very happy to do so. Thanks for inviting me.
The Health and Healthcare Forum is produced by Roberta Hall and recorded with the aid of Joe Magner of Anabyte Electronics and Recording in Corvallis, Oregon. Theme music was composed by Lori Childers and played by Lori Childers in Kent White.
Good afternoon. I'm Joe Clement for the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, March 10th. The American Public Transit Association released a report showing that Americans are using public transportation at a rate higher than any time in the last 50 years. Citing expanded bus and train networks, the report also notes that Americans are expanding their transportation options on a personal level. Described as a long-term trend, the move toward public transport now accounts for 1 in 3 trips nationally. A prisoner exchange brokered by Qatar and Lebanon has resulted in the release of over 150 female prisoners held by the Assad regime in Syria and 13 Syrian Greek Orthodox nuns held by Syrian rebel forces. Noting that they were allowed to continue wearing their crosses while held captive, the nuns described their captors as very sweet. The deal is a rarity, one of a handful brokered during the entire 3-year civil war in Syria. A United Nations special reporter for human rights has called for independent investigations of drone strike attacks that have killed civilians in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, and elsewhere, with a trend of decreasing drone strikes in Pakistan and increased strikes in Afghanistan and Yemen. The shift in strike locations comes with increases in civilian deaths. The reporter notes that unanticipated civilian deaths require the perpetrators of a drone strike to do an immediate inquiry and to make the results public. 2013 saw a dramatic increase in civilian deaths associated with drone strikes. The report also notes that there have been no reported drone strikes since the beginning of 2014. Taliban forces in Afghanistan have threatened to attack anyone who goes near presidential polling booths in the upcoming elections there. The April 5th polling will see a change in the presidency as Hamid Karzai is barred from running for election. The election, if successful, will be the first peaceful democratic transfer of power in Afghanistan. For the KABU News at Noon, I'm Joe Clement.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Stand by for the Noontime Jamboree. Come on, come on, come on, come on.
Trailer for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets, ain't got no cigarettes. Ah, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means, king of the road. Third boxcar, midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine. Wool worn out suit and shoes, I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies I have found, short but not too big around. I'm a man of means by no means, king of the road. I know every engineer on every train, all of the children and all of their names, and every handout in every town, and every lock that ain't locked when no one's around. I sing trailers for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets, ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means, king of the road. Trailers for sale rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no booze, no pets, I ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12.
I can settle down and be doing just fine, till I hear an old freight rolling down the line. Then I hurry straight
And if I didn't go, I believe I'd blow my stack. I love you, baby, but you gotta understand, when the Lord made me, He made a rambling man. Some folks might say that I'm no good, that I wouldn't settle down if I could. But when that open road starts to call in me, there's something over the hill that I gotta see. Sometimes it's hard, but you gotta understand, when the Lord made me, He made a rambling man. I love to see the times a-passing by, and to ride these rails 'neath God's blue sky. Let me travel this land, from the mountains to the sea, 'cause that's the life I believe He meant for me. And when I'm gone and at my grave you stand, just say God's called home, you ran.
Well, there's a leak in this old building. Yes, there's a leak in this old building. Well, there's a leak.